Off Base Podcast.
This is Last Place Joe. There's no shame in finishing last. Anyone who listens to my commentary on this podcast, do it at your own risk.
We can really express our true opinions about who we think sucks. Mr. Timothy Lamar Lincecum.
That guy's a gas can. Terrible second half last year. Bad spring so far. I don't like him. I think he's overrated.
I don't have a lot of good data to back this up, but I'm going to say it. I think Matt Kemp's overrated.
You think Prince is a justified top 10 pick?
I don't like him. I think he's overrated.
I think Marmol is overrated.
I think Jacoby Ellsbury is overrated. I don't like Evan Longoria or David Wright. I think they're both overrated. I happen to think I have the best and brightest insights among the three of us.
And I finished in last place.
You got Scott Bodley here, the BOD. I work hard all day. One's in a foot race. Adrian, Poppy, or Usain Bolt running backwards.
I thought Sean Markham was your secret love child.
You know, we really did it for the Bengals.
After Tulo, it is a barren wasteland. You might as well draft Ernie Banks or Jeff Blauser.
Well, apparently we had a slight Twitter malfunction.
I don't really consider Cabrera first baseman. If you're playing him at first base, you're an idiot. Why would someone take Votto over Cano? It blows my mind. I'm just a champion all the time.
The Big Cat.
We are three knuckleheads sitting around doing a podcast on fantasy baseball.
It took it a little while for the secret to actually get out.
Every time Wally picks somebody up, it's gold. It could be, you know, my grandma, and all of a sudden she'd be hitting like 350.
Until I see Miguel Cabrera out there with an actual frying pan on his hand, then I'll change my mind. Matt Kemp's going to win the NL MVP. If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Sit back, enjoy the information, the knowledge.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Off-Base Podcast. This is episode 5. Glad you could join us. We are now officially at the start of the Major League Baseball season. Two games have been played over in Japan. Highly anticipated matchup between the Mariners and the A's.
If your alarm clock wasn't set, you missed out.
Did you guys get up and watch any of these games?
I caught the tail end of the game today.
Yeah.
The second game, yeah.
I remember a couple years ago I got up for the Red Sox, but when we're talking A's and Mariners.
Right. When it was the Sox, I did get up early. I set my alarm for those games, but
we were watching the replay of the first game last night. What did you say about it?
Yeah, me and the BOD were sitting there watching it on MLB Network. What was it, like 9 o'clock last night? And I was like, I'm pretty sure that we're two of maybe 1,000 people watching this game right now.
It's actually a great way to transition into the season because you have spring training, which is one class of baseball. Then you get the Mariners playing the A's, slightly step up.
Quadruple A.
And then next week we kick it off with real baseball. So I have to say my batter, I started Coco Crisp and Jesus Montero for the past two nights and combined 1-for-15 with no counting stats. Pretty bad start to the season for the Tigers.
It was funny because I told Bodley yesterday going into the second game, I was like, what's the over-under on Bartolo Colon being picked up by noon tomorrow? Because he was starting for the A's, and I knew if he had a jam that someone was going to jump on him. But I don't think he's actually been picked up yet, but he threw a heck of a game. So I would be surprised if he made it through the week on the free agent wire.
I love Bartolo. Do you guys like him?
I'm not sold on it. All last year, he kept putting up jams, and I kept waiting. Every start, I was like, this is the start where he's going to get lit. So,
but you got to think, 50% of the reason why you liked him last year, Bods, was because
he was fat.
He played for the Yankees. He's probably going to get you a W if he can hold the other team under 5 runs. It's not the case now.
But he looked nasty this morning / last night.
Right. So, I mean, 6 Ks, 8 innings. He looked good.
Although, how would you look if you pitched against the Mariners?
Well, that's true, too. But it's not like that division he's pitching in is a major, is a big hitting division. And he's in a great ballpark.
He'll be pitching against the Mariners again next week, I think.
You get them 20 times, 19 times across the course of the season. I mean, I guess he doesn't get them 19 times, but.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see what happens. We definitely look forward to the start of the season coming up, I believe it's Wednesday of next week.
Yep.
And then all throughout the weekend, different teams with their home opener.
Why is it so late? Isn't it normally like Monday they kick it
it's
off?
The worst. It used to be end of March, right? Now it's end of the first week of April.
Well, not even that. I hate how it's in the middle of the week. They usually do like the Sunday night baseball one game, and then Monday, everybody rolls. I don't know why they're going midweek.
Is it because of the Final Four? They're trying to avoid.
Oh, maybe. They started Final Four Monday before, though. I know that they have. I remember.
Yeah. Well, it's frustrating because I'm ready to go. We don't have any Twitter responses to read this week. And BOD, can you tell us what happened there?
Well, apparently we had a slight Twitter malfunction. We got banned for aggressively following people.
That's what she said.
I don't even know what that means. I was just following people last Thursday night, trying to get a nice little group. And then all of a sudden it asked me to reset our password, and I emailed the big cat and said, what the heck's going on? It's not like we were like knocking on their door, like stalking these people. Just let us follow them.
So needless to say, we believe the issue's been resolved, and we're waiting to get the account reinstated.
They've been telling us it's going to be reinstated within 24 hours, like 4 days ago. So I don't know what's going on. I've been sending them emails every day saying, hey, it's another 24 hours. Where's my dang Twitter account?
The world needs our Twitter feed. This is an outrage.
This is an outrage. We were going to have a Twitter leak, and now it's all gone. They just screwed everything up.
Well.
Stupid well.
Stand by, listeners. We'll have more for you. You can send us emails in the meantime, offbasepodcast@gmail.com. We're getting a lot of fan mail. Love your questions.
Too bad we don't have time to answer any of them today on our podcast, but maybe next week.
Yeah, so you got the Twitter, you got the email. There's another way to follow us. I can't remember what it was now. I was thinking about it. I don't know. Screw that.
On our maybe our podcast.
Catch us on iTunes. Off Base Podcast.
On iTunes. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we are having more and more downloads every week. Shout outs to our friends in Europe and in Asia who are tuning in. Send us your suggestions if you want us to address your questions or even just do some role playing here on the air. I do a great Rod Carew impression. So
leave comments, ratings on iTunes. That stuff's going to help us kind of shoot up the rankings there a little bit. We definitely appreciate when people do that as well.
So. You know, let's encourage our listeners to hold up signs and say like off base podcast at games. So like, we're watching,
right?
Like that guy who sits behind the plate at Fenway, who's always wearing the hat and jacket. He should hold up the sign that says off base podcast.
Let's get some love out there.
Yeah.
Let's get some love. Well, last week we did our draft recap episode. This is our follow-up to the draft recap. We're going to talk about the second half of our draft, as well as evaluate how each team did. And I think we have some differing opinions on who came out of the draft ahead and who made some big mistakes. So we'll touch on that this week, too. We're going to start with recapping rounds 11 through 14, picks 100 through 140. And let's talk about some hits and misses, guys. Who do you like? What are some picks you see in that range that stood out to you as being winners?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a few good picks in there. I like the Jordan Zimmerman pick. Vengeance took him there in the 13th round.
That was nice.
I think Zimmerman's going to be a beast this year. He had a little bit of a slow start maybe that first month last year, but after that he was nails the rest of the season, and I think he's going to be a guy, puts up a good K rate. The Nationals are better. He's going to get some wins, and you know, I think he's going to be a good pitcher. So I really like that pickup right there. Another one I liked was Corey Lupke that same round in the 13th round. We've talked about Lupke a lot. He's one of those guys that's a darling in our league for whatever reason. But great K rate, great ballpark as well. You know, and a young guy that I think a lot of people are, you know, kind of chasing after in our league at least. So people are going to be pretty stoked with that pick, I think, too.
Keeping on the same theme of pitchers, I got to give myself some props for getting Josh Beckett. 13th round, Beckett put up sensational numbers last year, and I feel great about my Beckett pick. Finished last year with a 2.89 ERA, a 1.03 WHIP, and he struck out 175 guys.
I had him last year. He scares the crap out of me. He's too unreliable. I know he did it all last year, but man,
he's a guy that it seems like if it goes right, it goes really right. And when it goes bad,
it goes bad.
Yeah. And I mean, trust me, I've seen, I think, almost every Josh Beckett start since he's been in a Red Sox uniform. And the guy is absolutely filthy when he's right. But it's so hard to know. He goes seasons at a time where he'll either be amazing or he'll just be dreadful.
Yeah, I got to hope he can come close to what he did last year. I mean, 2.89, 1.03, pretty terrific for a 13th round pitcher. And he has to carry the load in Boston this year. We'll see if he does it. It's all or nothing with him.
Good news is now he's on your team. You're going to go box those starts, and he is the slowest freaking worker ever. It is like an hour for every inning and a half when he's on the mound. Oh, man. It gets brutal.
What do you have, BOD?
There aren't any picks that stand out positively in this round for me. I thought everyone did well. I kind of like my McCann pick in the 11th.
I like everyone's picking their own pick. Oh, man. Look at the job I did.
He dropped to the 11th. I wasn't planning on getting him, but he's there in the 11th round. Why not? So.
Well, here's a question, though, on that McCann pick. He's there because everyone's just letting catchers fall, right? Everyone feels like whether they get McCann or they get Miguel Olivo, they're pretty much getting the same catcher. So, I mean, do you feel like taking McCann in the 11th gives you an advantage at that position? Because, I mean, that's the only real reason to do that, right?
I think in the 11th round he does, but if it was in the 5th round, no. I mean, look at the guys who are going there. I have no problem taking McCann over, say, Gio Gonzalez or Sergio Santos or Daniel Murphy.
Well, the catchers were falling, but it's a good pick for you because regardless of when the catchers are going, McCann is a step above pretty much every other catcher out there. There's a couple guys in his league, but he's going to consistently give you 20 homers, maybe 22, 23 homers. And for him to fall that far to you in the 11th, I don't have any problem with that pick at all.
I mean, I don't know. That's part of my philosophy, I guess, is on the catchers. I think McCann's nice, but I think if you look down, he took, you know, you took Olivo in the 24th round. The difference between Olivo and McCann is not 10, 15 rounds. You know what I mean? Right here, it's a 13-round gap. I think you can get a catcher at the very end of the draft and get very similar value, with the exception of when Victor Martinez was playing, and you know he's going to play every day. And, you know, 2 years ago, Joe Mauer, for the most part.
Well, let's compare that McCann pick in the 11th round to what Andrew did with pick 71 overall. He took Joe Mauer. I mean, at least McCann is steady. You know what you're going to get from McCann, and it's solid. It's top of the class for catchers. And Andrew took Joe Mauer at pick 71. You don't know what you're going to get.
Well, that's just a bad pick with Mauer, if you ask me, more than, you know, a reflection on the McCann pick. It's just that, I would never take Joe Mauer that early. Especially, I mean, just the fact that he's a catcher is enough for me to not do it. But then with all the question marks that lay behind him, you know, it's too early for me.
All right, how about some misses in this range between picks 100 and 140?
How about Joaquin Soria? Let's talk about this. We all knew he was going to be heading to Tommy John, except Cobra, who took him.
Did you hear the room go dead silent when he made that pick?
It was so funny. What round did he take him in? Tell me again.
He
took him in the 13th. He took Soria in the 13th. As soon as he made the pick, everyone's dead silent. You could hear a pin drop, and everyone's eyes are darting back and forth, looking at each other like, do I say something? Do we say something here?
What's the code there? Because if someone asks me before, is he hurt, I'll say yes or no. But if he drafts him, it's over.
Yeah.
It's
on his team. So there was that 2 to 3 second period of absolute dead silence. And then I was sitting next to Splinters, and he all of a sudden got this nervous tone. He's like, and who's next? just to avoid having to even be able to back out of the pick. Yeah, it was uncomfortable and obviously a wasted pick.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, everyone in the room felt like they just kind of screwed the guy a little bit, I think. But that's one of the things. You've got to come in.
No, man.
I mean, you've got to check the injury report before you come walking in. And he knew Soria was hurt, but he didn't know he was going for TJ. And so, you know, he was gambling on the pick thinking, well, it's going to be value down the road, which the rest of us knew wasn't the case. So
I'll give you another loser. I did not like the pick by right field of Ubaldo Jimenez in the 11th round. This is not your grandfather's Ubaldo. Last year, before he got traded, when he was in Colorado, he had a 4.46 ERA and a 1.37 WHIP. He gets traded to Cleveland, where he makes 11 starts, and he has a 5.10 and a 1.45. It didn't get any better. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if it's his head. But I wouldn't touch that guy in the last round, at least until he puts up some good starts.
Let me tell you this. As the guy who owned Ubaldo last year, took him early. He was my first pitcher on my team, which – for me, it wasn't that early, but it was still, you know, one of my earlier picks, first 10 picks. And he was absolutely brutal. And I kept holding on to him, I had an offer for trades from Bleachers and a couple other guys, pretty good offers within the first 60 to 90 days of the season. And I was like, no, I'm going to hold out. He's going to come around. He's going to be better than this. He's going to at least give me some value. And I just, for the entire second half of the season, he sat on my bench. I didn't start him because I didn't feel like I could take those numbers, but I just let him sit there waiting to get, you know, at least to string together two or three good starts, and it never came. And it makes me nervous. I mean, for a guy who was so filthy not that long ago, it's amazing to see how far he's fallen, because it's not like he's had these major injuries or anything that you can point to be like, you know, this is why he's fallen off.
I don't know what's wrong with him, but he pitched almost 200 innings of junky baseball. If you're going to take a flyer on this guy, you think, oh, maybe he's got it figured out. That's got to be like round 20, round 22.
It's round where you took Johan Santana later in the draft,
right,
in the 17th. That's about where I'd want to take Ubaldo. Those two are basically on the same plane to me. I mean, Ubaldo might as well just be coming off of Tommy John or something like that. He's got, you know, it's worse than him coming off Tommy John. You don't even know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I can't trust him. So to take him in round 11, that's a stretch for me. I call that a loser.
Any other losers? I got one. Daniel Murphy in the 12th round by Bleacher. I don't think he would have been drafted. Would you guys take him, Daniel Murphy?
I agree. I don't think he would have been drafted.
He hits 320, which is nice, but he has, what, maybe 20 more RBIs than I do? I mean, he doesn't hit. Who says he's going to hit 320 again? Average fluctuates a lot.
Right. Well, there's no doubt that that's way early for him to go. Like you said, if it's a guy that you even have to consider, he might not get drafted. For him to go in the first half is crazy.
Well, and if he likes him, that's fine. But like you've been saying, take him in the 20th round, not in the 12th.
Yeah, don't necessarily hate the pick. I mean, the guy doesn't have a lot of power. He might hit for average. Could certainly be a good guy to fill a roster spot, maybe as a backup. But in the 11th round, or when is it, 12th round, you've got to get a starter.
Wouldn't you rather take Howie Kendrick?
Absolutely.
And he went in the 14th round.
Dude, Howie Kendrick versus Daniel Murphy is not even, it's not even in the same ballpark. I mean, Daniel Murphy, that's a guy, I picked him up last year for a week, 2 weeks when my second baseman was hurt, and he filled in. It was a nice stopgap, but that's all he was for me. A guy that I could go pick up, throw in. He's going to give me a little bit better than maybe typical replacement value. And then when my, you know, starting second baseman came back, I was able to go back to my other guy. So it's definitely a curious pick at the very least to go that early.
Yeah, I'd love to hear back from Andrew. I remember the pick. I see him looking at his computer. He takes Daniel Murphy. I think his little spreadsheet told him to take Daniel Murphy. And I don't know if he's just a Jedi in training and he had to follow the master plan, but it seemed like a weird pick, especially because 100 picks later, he still could have got him.
Real quick sidetrack, saying you want to hear back from Andrew, I want to touch real quick on what this podcast has done to the message board in our league. We've got a very active league. The message board's usually pretty active, but the podcast this last week really got some people worked up. They didn't like what we were saying. They definitely didn't like when we were calling their team out. So, you know, if that's the case, you might want to turn the podcast off now because there's going to be a lot more of that.
It's only going to get worse.
The co-owner of Volleyballs, I don't think he's posted in years, and he had a nice little rant.
Yeah. Yeah, so. People do not like to have their picks called out, and I don't blame them. I'm the exact same. You guys came after me with the Hunter Pence. You've come after me a couple times since then about it, and I'm still, you know, it's something you get defensive about. It's like someone's making fun of your kid, basically, when they go after your picks, so...
That's right.
All right, let's look at picks 140 to 180 and some hits and misses. I'll give you a pick that I did like. In the 15th round, Wally Ball's got Chase Utley. Utley, we don't know what to expect out of him. We don't know if this is a guy that's going to be all-star quality second baseman. We don't know if he's going to miss the entire year being injured or something in between. And I think when you're in the 15th round and you get a guy that has that potential, I don't mind that pick at all. Even if he comes back and gives you, you know, 17 homers, 75 RBIs, and hits 275, and that's all you get out of him, at least you haven't lost much because you took him in the 15th round. So I like that pick.
But I think that's what you would get if you played a whole year. The problem with Utley is there's no timetable for his return, so he can only play a month. That's his problem there. You have no idea what you're getting with Chase Utley this year.
I don't mind the Utley pick. I definitely think in rounds 15 through 24 is where you're looking to gain upside. You know, you're taking some risky picks. But I would not have taken Chase Utley where he did. I mean, I took Kendry Morales two picks later. Another guy, huge risk, right? He hasn't played in 2 years. But Kendry Morales is playing in spring training. You know what I mean? And his upside is just as high as Chase Utley's. So to say that you would take Utley over Morales, especially with what we know now, with Morales going out and absolutely mashing since he's been back in spring training, you know, I think that maybe you wait another 2-3 rounds on that. There was still quality on the board at that point.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know so much about comparing Utley to Morales as much as, you know, finding some quality at second base, right? You're late in the draft at this point. I think it's fine. His other second baseman, he ended up with Ryan Roberts way at the end of the draft, and he's also got Dustin Ackley. So between those three, he'll have somebody to fill in. But he's hoping Utley is really the Chase Utley that he wants him to be. So I think it's fine.
Is he, though? I mean, he's touting Dustin Ackley after that first game as being the savior. So
how much different is Chase Utley going to be than Dustin Ackley? I think Dustin Ackley would have a better year even if they were both playing.
No, because Ackley's upside is 12 homers and 20 bags. And Utley's upside is 25 homers and 15 bags. You know, Utley, if he's the Utley that we've seen in the past or even close to it, it's a steal in the 15th round.
It's one of those things. It's hard. it's been a couple years now, so it's easy to forget how good Chase Utley was. Before he started getting hurt every other day, he was a mother. I mean, he could absolutely rake. But it's been long enough now that the, you know, those question marks are pretty dang big.
And the problem with Utley is it's not like he can get a surgery to get better. He's just constantly hurt. He's just injured all the time.
Chronically. And the fact they don't even know really what the crap's going on is the big question mark there, I think.
All right, what else do you guys have between picks 140 and 180, other hits that you see there?
I loved Surge's pick of Vance Worley. I think that's a nice upside pick. He pitched well at the end of last year. I think he had 11 wins. Pretty good for the fifth starter.
Let's talk a little bit about the BOD's pick of David Freese. Tell us what was going through your mind there.
That's what I like to call a panic pick. If you notice, in the 15th round, Ibar went, then Morales, then I took Freese. Those are the two guys that were I was targeting there. I wanted Ibar to play short. He's gone. Then he took Morales, and I thought he'd be a nice sleeper. And then Freese, I panicked. I didn't know what else to do. And so I took Freese. I still don't like that pick. That's like my worst pick of the draft. Do you like it or do you not like it?
I don't hate it. It's maybe a little earlier than I would have liked, but dude, he looked so good in the playoffs last year. And granted, the playoffs magnify everything, right? I mean, they made Cody Ross look like he was a Hall of Famer 2 years ago. So you can't really put everything on how a guy performs in the playoffs. But I think Freese is a guy who, if he stays healthy, can be pretty legit. So I don't hate it, but.
But if you look at like Mike Moustakas is on the waiver wire right now, how much of a difference is there between him and David Freese?
Well, not only that, but you've got Michael Young that can play third base. You have Emilio Bonifacio that you're going to have to play somewhere because you drafted him for speed. He potentially is going to fill up a spot at third base. So where does David Freese even play for you?
Well, that was the thing. Young is going to play second. I moved Bonifacio to short, even though I was going to take Ibar there at short, and then Freese is going to be third. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, where does that leave Neil Walker? Your man crush, Neil Walker.
I know. So now I have some crappy infield conundrum here between the great Neil Walker, Kelly Johnson, and David Freese on go second and third.
Not to mention Derek Jeter.
Well,
between him and Bonifacio. I'm just saying, the David Freese pick, he seems like the odd man out in your lineup.
Well, the problem is with those guys is that none of them are special. Except Bonifacio, because he could probably get a lot of bags. But other than that, it's just crap. And, like, they're not going to win me the league.
Not even cautious league either.
No, that's true. But, you know, it's something that makes me worry.
Let me give you a pick I didn't like in this range. Andrew, in the 18th round, took Vinny Pistano.
We're not liking his picks, are we?
I mean, are we to the point now where in round 18 of a 24-round draft, you're potentially trying to grab a setup guy? I'd love to hear from Andrew. Did he believe that Chris Perez was going to be hurt to start with, and he was hoping to get vulture saves, or is he just hoping that closer job changes? Because everything I've read about Perez, he's locked and loaded. He's the guy. So if you're going to draft a setup man in round 18, why not draft that same setup man in round 23 right at the same time you should be drafting Murphy?
Yeah,
it's two picks for Andrew that were way too early, in my opinion.
I agree with that. It's not worth it.
Yeah, well, I mean, as the only guy in this room who has a middle reliever on his roster and drafted a middle reliever, I mean, I do think there's value in that, but I wouldn't have done it that early.
So do you think he was taking Pistano because of his middle relief value?
No, I think it's combined. It's just like Clippard. When I took Tyler Clippard, the assumption by everyone, not just me, was that he was the guy behind Drew Storen. I knew Storen was a little banged up, but I also know that Tyler Clippard has an amazing K rate. He has amazing ratios, and he has produced for 2 years in a row really well. So I have no problem running him out there and then hoping he's the next guy in line. I mean, there's two things that go along.
But you took Clippard in round 22, and you took Clippard because he had setup man value independent of whether he'd become the closer.
Right.
Andrew took Pestano in round 18, and presumably not for that reason. I don't like that pick.
Well, here's Pestano's numbers. Well, especially
if he took him just because he thought he was going to get the closer job. That's insane because I think there were still other guys who actually had closer jobs left on the board.
Yeah. He actually has a good number. 62 innings pitched, 84 Ks, 2.32 ERA, 105 WHIP. Pretty darn good.
Right. No, I mean, that's very similar to Tyler Clippard.
But wouldn't he have been there, again, round 18? Exactly. Wouldn't he have been there round 20, round 22, exactly. Even round 24, even undrafted?
I agree.
All right, who else in that range between picks 140 and 180 do you guys have as a miss?
Back to round, this goes back to Bleacher again. I did not like the Sean Markham pick. He took him in the 13th round.
I thought Sean Markham was your secret love child.
Well, that's the thing is, if anybody loves Sean Markham, it's me. Sean Markham's a guy that's been on my team multiple times over the last 3 or 4 years. But you tell me, he did not look right last year, did he?
No.
I mean, he did not look good. And to take him that early, I mean, look at some of the other starting pitchers that went after him. Guys like Jeremy Hellickson or Anibal Sanchez. You know, there was other good starting pitching on the board. And Martin was not a guy who has a great K rate. I mean, he's a cunning thumber who's up there throwing 85, topping out at, you know, at 85. I just felt like there's other routes to go. And Andrew's probably turned this thing off, or he's in his car headed over here right now, but.
All right, let's move on. Between picks 180 and 220, this is the end of the draft. It's hard to really criticize any, but I think there were some good picks in here. I'll start us out with one in the 20th round. The whole effing show. New guy in our league. I thought he did well with his pick of Liriano. This is the point late in the draft where to grab a guy like Liriano, there's no downside. If he ends up being terrible or injured, you haven't lost much, but he has a lot of upside. So, for example, look at the picks that went before him. Logan Morrison or Austin Jackson. Those guys don't excite me. At least a pick like Liriano there. There's significant upside if things go right, so I like that pick.
I agree. I liked Scudero in the 21st round. He's sitting second in that lineup. How many runs is he going to score? 100? That'll be nice.
You've been trying to convince me on the Scudero thing for a while. I don't hate the pick. I mean, you got him late enough. You know, it's whatever.
He's a shortstop.
I just don't think Marco Scudero is going to have amazing numbers.
He was good after he came back from injury last year in Boston.
He was okay. Marco Scudero is not a bad player. I just think he's a replacement level player.
The problem with Scudero is a lot of times he's just like empty batting average. He doesn't do anything else but batting average. But since he's hitting second in that lineup, it seems like he'll be able to get you some runs.
Right. And that late, you know, whatever. A pick. Clint went back to back with great picks in my mind here in the 21st round and the 22nd round. He took Gabby Sanchez in the 21st, and then he turned around and got Mark Trumbo in the 22nd. I love both of those picks. I think Gabby Sanchez that late is a huge opportunity, especially for Clint, a guy who had gone with a lot of pitchers and closers early, to be able to get a guy like Sanchez who can provide some pretty good pop that late. I think it's a great pick.
Well, where's he going to play, though? I mean, both of those guys you just mentioned are first base eligible. And I know Trumbo's going to probably play third, but look at Clint's lineup. Albert, obviously, is going to play first. Napoli has first base eligibility. He'll play him as a catcher, of course. But he also has Freddie Freeman. So by the time he added Gabby Sanchez, where's Gabby going to play?
Well, 21st round, they're all bench spots anyway.
That's true. And I mean, he's going to have the question, okay, am I playing? Trumbo is going to get third base eligibility, so that shores him up, gives him a little backup at third. And with Gabby Sanchez, if he's going to platoon Gabby Sanchez with Freddie Freeman in his utility spot, that's a pretty good combo. You can get a lot of production out of those two guys, as much as anyone's going to get from their utility.
I really do like the Trumbo pick, but I'm looking at Clint's lineup more closely. He doesn't even have a backup second baseman or a backup third baseman. I mean,
Trumbo's that backup third baseman.
Okay, good. Yeah, so Trumbo. For me, I like to have a balanced lineup because, you know, you guys are going to have days off. So if your second baseman is Ricky Weeks and you have no other second baseman on your roster, you're going to give away 15 games a year with no one in your lineup.
There's not enough spots to have a backup at every position.
Well, if you have four first basemen.
No, that's true.
Well, that's true. I mean, maybe there's not, but for him, that's still the best value pick. If he has to choose between picking Gabby Sanchez there or whoever is available on the second base market, at that point, those second basemen that were still available, he can get them off the waiver wire. There's no reason to draft him. So if his second baseman does get hurt, he can go and say, okay, fine, I'll drop Gabby Sanchez and pick up a second baseman right now. But he's not going to have to. He's going to be able to drop someone else who hasn't produced for him. And he's going to have Freeman and Gabby Sanchez platooning at utility. And at some point, someone's going to come and need power. Those are two guys that are producing enough power that they could be valuable to someone else. He can trade them, you know, fill a gap on his team. I mean, I just feel like it was a really good value pick, even if it doesn't fit into his roster.
No, that's fair. And particularly with Trumbo, I think that guy's going to rake some homers. So I do like that pick.
Here, one more. I got one more I really like. And this is maybe my favorite pick of the draft was last round, 24th round, Vengeance took Jeff Francoeur. Now, Jeff Francoeur is not a sexy name because he's been around the league. He's been a middling outfielder for so long. But you look at what he did last year.
Didn't he go 2020?
Yeah. You look at that Royals lineup and Francoeur is one of those guys that I kept seeing on my board. And I was like, I'm going to let him slide. I think he's going to make it another round. And I kept doing that until it was the last round and then Vengeance snapped him up. I would have taken him with that very next pick. And I think it was a great pick because, you know, you get that kind of quality, what Francoeur did last year in the last round. If he, all he has to do is repeat that year and it's an amazing pick.
Yeah.
If he improves upon it, you know, it's even better. And Francoeur's a guy that we know has the tools. you know, 3-4 years ago, he had some a great season. So it's possible for him to really
have a great point. And the Kansas City lineup is better and better offensively, so that means more opportunities to drive in runs, better pitches to hit. So, yeah, I agree.
And if he sucks, who cares? It's the last pick.
Right. Yeah, you can go find somebody else.
I've already dropped my last pick, so that tells you.
Well, that goes to another thing. I mean, what? We had our draft a week ago, and there's already been how many ads drops? You know, there's been a number of people adding and dropping guys already. So
yeah. Let me tell you a pick I didn't like in this range, going back to the 16th round. The whole effing show, he took Nick Swisher. You might say, well, you know, it's not that bad of a pick. It's late in the 16th round. Swisher probably will hit 20-plus bombs. But when you look at his lineup, he's actually penciled in Swisher as his first baseman from what I can see. He doesn't have anything better to put at first base than Nick Swisher. I mean, you have to get big power numbers out of your corner infielders. And for him to have just Swisher only at first base, I'm scratching my head. I don't know how you wait until the 16th round. And then he didn't even back it up with an Ike Davis or a Paul Goldschmidt or a Gabby Sanchez. I mean, he's stuck. Right now, he's got one first baseman on his roster.
Well, and that goes back to the value that Clint got with Gabby Sanchez 4 rounds later. You know what I mean? There's a team that doesn't even have a first baseman, and Clint's still stealing Gabby Sanchez. You know, I don't know. Nick Swisher is not the guy I want at first base because there's so many teams out there. More than half the league's got a huge bopper at first. I think it puts you at a real disadvantage. You know, if you're going position by position, you've got to make up a huge gap at first base all of a sudden.
Swisher's nice. He'll have a few weeks where he's super hot, and he'll be a nice little stopgap. But other than that, you can't rely on him all year long.
I think Holeff and Show has to go out and make some kind of a trade to upgrade that first base spot. That was a real head-scratcher for me.
Here's betting that as soon as Clint hears this podcast, there's a trade on Evan Show's porch.
I don't like Andrew's pick hitting on Bleacher again. 19th round, Doug Fister. He doesn't strike anybody
out. You don't
out.
Like that?
No. Look at his defense. Now he has Cabrera and Prince.
Dude, I know everyone's talking about that Detroit defense and it's going to kill him because he's a ground ball pitcher. I don't think it's going to be that big an effect. I mean, it's not like they're going out there without gloves. I understand Miguel Cabrera is not the most, you know, nimble guy, but he's still going to field it. He's still going to be okay.
But it's not just that. They don't have anybody on the team that can play any defense. And Fister has to rely on defense. He's not striking anybody out, right?
Until I see Miguel Cabrera out there with an actual frying pan on his hand, then I'll change my mind.
I mean, he played third base in Florida. The bottom line is, it's the 19th round, so Doug Fister, exactly. It's not a great pick.
What were Doug Fister's ratios last year? I understand that those are going to go up, you know what I mean?
Right.
But if he has an ERA of 3.5 and you got him in the 19th round, that's still pretty good. His ERA was under 3 last year. That's a huge jump that you're talking about.
Right.
You're telling me it's going to be a half run a game?
And you've got to say he's a better value in Detroit than he was in Seattle. Because at least he's going to get some offensive support, and he might pick up more Ws. Plus, he's not in the same division as both the Angels and the Rangers. I don't know. 19th round, I don't hate the pick.
I think a lot of this goes back to me and Scott had a little bit of a conversation about pitchers with low K rates.
Yeah, he's freaking everybody out.
Scott hates guys that don't strike people out.
Right.
But here's the thing. There's a lot of other things to take into consideration. Fister has great ratios. And if you can make up the case somewhere else,
which he has done with his middle relief.
Right. Then he's going to be okay. So I don't think it's a terrible pick. I mean,
I just don't like Doug Fister. And by the way, back to your comment about Miguel played third a few years ago. I used to wear like size 28 waist pants a few years ago. All right? It was a few years ago.
All right. We're moving on. So we've talked about picks we like, picks that were not good. That's the draft, guys. And so now we sum it up. Overall, looking at these teams, looking at the totality of the players that were picked on each team, let's talk about who came out ahead and who were the losers in this year's draft.
I don't know if I'm stealing somebody's thunder. I like Cobra's team a lot. At first, I didn't like it, but his pitching is unreal. His third starter is Bumgarner. His fourth pitcher is Yu Darvish. That's pretty nice. And his offense, the reason why I like Cobra's team a lot is he took A-Rod. I think A-Rod's going to have a huge year and he's going to help his team out of time.
I agree. That's one I put down as well. Cobra, and the irony here is that the past few years, when he's come out of the draft, I didn't like his team. I thought, that guy doesn't even know what he's doing. And, of course, he beat me in the standings by a mile. This year, I actually think he came out looking pretty good. I've criticized his Tulowitzki pick, but he built around it, so I liked how he finished. The thing that stands out the most for me is the balance that he has. I think he's got power. He's definitely got Tulowitzki. He's got Carlos Santana and BOD. You and I both agree. We think A-Rod is probably going to come back and be more like, you know, at least 20, could threaten 30 home runs if he's healthy. So I think he's got power, but he also has lots of balance on the team. I mean, Desmond Jennings is a, took him pretty high, but you know, yeah, if he gives you those bags. So overall, I liked Cobra's draft.
Well, the thing too with Cobra is that I've learned to, I don't understand how he drafts at all. I just don't get it, but yet he wins. So if it looks somewhat good to me, it's got to be pretty good in his little draft world.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's been the wizard. Every time, I mean, every year it seems like we come away from the draft thinking Cobra's got the worst team, and then he finishes in the top three inevitably, usually second, right behind Wally. So, you know, there's something too. There's a method to the madness there.
And the sleeper pick for me of his draft was getting Ike Davis with pick 157 because people are in love with Ike Davis. The fences have come in at Citi Field. They think Ike Davis is ready to go. If he's not healthy, of course, that's a bad pick, but it's so late in the draft that it doesn't matter. But if he is healthy, he might be the prospect everyone thought. So, nice job, Cobra. We'll see what happens.
We gotta get him on the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, we'll do that in the next couple weeks. All right, so who's your big winner, Joe?
Well, I put myself down, of course. I think you guys are in trouble. I had a heck of a draft, guys. I nailed it. I pull off the trade with the BOD so I can still get Lincecum. But I'm loaded, man. I've got speed. Do you guys know D. Gordon has already stolen 10 bases in spring training? He's hitting over 400.
I didn't look at the conversion rate, though. How many steals did you have to get in spring training to equal one on our...
Hey, the guy's getting on base. I mean, we knew he had 200 at-bats last year. For me, it was a good enough sample size. Now he's projecting to go 50 to 60 stolen bases. I love my pick of D. Gordon. Love it. Don't even send me any trade offers. He's off the table.
Can I criticize your team?
Let me just say one thing. I do think I came away weak with closers. I took two closers in Axford and Storen, and those were the only two I got. And now Storen's on the DL at least to start the year, so I am in trouble a little bit with my closers. But I like my starters, so I'm giving myself A+.
My concern with Argy is you're going to be starting three guys: Gordon, Bourne, and Coco Crisp. But all they do is run.
I'm not going to start Coco Crisp. I'm going to trade him to you in June when you need stolen bases.
No, I'll just pick up some guy at the waiver wire who's going to get 30 bases. But even better, Bourne and D. Gordon, all they're going to do is run. And so you're hurting yourself there in the power categories. So the question is, does Stanton, Matt Holliday, Kinsler, Cabrera make that up?
But where does Michael Bourne hit in the order?
One.
Where does D. Gordon hit in the order?
Right. But they're
three and two, baby.
But how many home runs are those two going to get combined? Maybe four more than us?
I don't need any home runs. Michael Bourne will hit 300.
I think he will.
Oh, I got plenty of home runs.
I think you're gambling on Michael Bourne hitting 300. I know he's at 290 last year. Why don't you go back a little bit further than the last 12 months and see what he's hit?
I love Michael Bourne.
Let's look at 2010. What did he hit in 2010?
What if he doesn't hit more than 270? He's still going to steal 60 bags.
Why not?
I already have a 10 right now in stolen bases.
Right, you do. And congratulations. But if you lap the field, you still have a 10. I looked into the rules. You don't get an 11, no matter how many you steal. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter. And yet, you've got a ton of stolen bases, but the power's got to be a bit of concern. And I think the average does somewhere down the line.
Oh, power. I'm not concerned about power. I got power for sale, ladies. Come on now. I got Miguel Cabrera. I got Kinsler, who hit 30 bombs last year. I don't know if you've heard of Giancarlo Stanton, Matt Holliday. I mean, I got David Ortiz pick 100.
You've got Matt Holliday, who Bleachers was on this very podcast saying him and Dustin Pedroia together aren't going to hit 20 bombs.
Guys, I love it. And don't forget this. Ryan Howard's back in June, baby.
Yeah, oh, boy. Let's not start that argument.
We'll see if he's back.
All right, who else do you like? Who came out ahead for you guys?
Scott, you go.
Well, it's funny. I don't know that he came out. This isn't my favorite team on the board, but everyone was really hammering Clint after the draft because he went closers early, and it's very different than what we've seen. But when I sit down and take a look at Clint's team, I think Clint did an amazing job of having a plan and making it to come together with this team. Because essentially what he's done is he's filled out a team where he's essentially going to punt average, okay? And he's going to compete in every other category across the board. He's got tons of power. He did an amazing job of drafting power late. He got good speed late. He had to sacrifice average to do that, but then he's got great closers. He's got a pretty strong pitching staff. I think he can compete doing this as long as he continues down the path of saying, hey, I know I'm punting average. I've got to go ahead and buoy up all these other categories. Now, I'm not saying it's my favorite team in the league, but I think he has an actual opportunity to compete for the league based upon the way he built this roster.
Yeah, I do too. By the middle of the draft, I had almost written him off because he had four closers taken. When did he take Betancourt with pick 103? Yikes. But then that's it. He didn't take any more closers, so he filled out his team. And like you said, late in the draft, he did well. I mean, Torrey Hunter at pick 223, that's nice. Mike Adams might become the closer in Texas. There's another closer. And then we've already talked about getting Trumbo. And I also think his Chris Carpenter pick at 183, there's a lot of upside and not much downside if you miss on that pick. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Clint. But his team, a lot better looking at it today than it was the night of the draft for me.
Well, at least Clint will win the category for neck pain with Chris Carpenter. I think that's all he's going to get this year. I sort of like Vengeance's team. He has really good pitching. His fourth pitcher is Jordan Zimmermann, Daniel Hudson, David Price, Dan Heron. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I worry about his first base there with Pablo and Uke. But other than that, I think his team is pretty balanced.
I mean, he lost Ryan Madsen. He couldn't have known on draft day, of course, but
that was brutal.
That's the 87th overall pick, so he whiffed completely on that pick.
And that's funny because I was talking to Bodley about that. I picked right after Vengeance, and I was chomping at the bit to take Madsen. I thought Madsen was going to have a huge year. I loved his stuff, getting that closing role, and yep. Vengeance took him the pick before me, and I was pissed when it happened, and now here we are a week later, and it's the best thing that ever happened. So, there is definitely an aspect of luck that goes into this whole thing.
I've criticized his picks a little bit on the message board. I don't like Dan Uggla. I would never have him on my team. He's a black hole for average. And Uglis, I'm really watching to see what happens because he could have gotten a great steal at pick 94. But it's another case where he's probably going to need to do it for 2 or even 3 months of the season before I believe Uglis is the same guy he was, say, 2 years ago.
Well, everyone knows my stance on Uglis. I think that his bat's slowing down. But at where he got him, I mean, it was, what, 3 rounds later than he's going in most drafts. So yeah. It was a pretty good pick, I think.
I think the other team we should point out is Wally. It's just because if every guy in his team plays 162 games, he'll have a great year. But I think he'll be a boomer bust this year.
Guess what else? If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. I mean, these things are not going to happen.
Interesting theory.
I put him down on my losers list because that exact thing. If you just look at his team and you don't factor health into it.
What a segue, by the way.
Stacks up nicely, but, I mean, if you have 2 or 3 guys that are injury risks, you have a cause to be concerned. If you have 5 or 6 guys, if your whole draft almost is based around guys that either have been hurt or are underproducing after being hurt, I mean, we've talked about it. Let's just name off the guys that are potential risks. And I won't even mention how sucky Hanley Ramirez is about to be. Josh Hamilton, Nelson Cruz, David Wright, Adam Wainwright, Jason Mott, Carlos Marmol, Chase Utley.
B.J. Upton's going to be on the DL to start.
I mean, the whole team is almost injured. I said this last week. He might literally have spots on his roster that he cannot put a player in because he doesn't have enough healthy guys.
Here's the thing. There's a definite strategy to saying, hey, I'm going to take risk and try and get the most value. If this guy breaks right, then I'm going to get a lot of value. The problem is you're stacking risk on top of risk. If you do it with 2 guys and you say, okay, if both these guys break right, great. But it's like putting a parlay together in Vegas. If you're betting on 1 game, you have a pretty good chance you could win that 50-50. If you put together 6 games, it becomes pretty damn hard. And for the odds of all these guys to break right, it seems almost impossible for me. Some of these are going to have to break wrong. And even then, it depends on how that breaks down. If it's 4 right, 2 wrong, he could still be okay, but it is going to be interesting.
Yeah, he's rolling like a 7-man parlay here, so we'll see if he hits it big or not. If anyone does, it could be Wally, but...
Well, all we have to do is look at the first game. He drafts Dustin Ackley and, talks about how he's so great, and then the first game out, the dude comes out and hits a yak, so who knows?
That's Wally. Who else do you guys think missed?
Missed? Let's talk about Show's team. I was criticizing you, Argy, because you don't have any power. Well, you'll probably get a 3 or 4 because of teams like Show's where he has Kemp and then other power guys on his team. Alex Avila? Adam Jones? Delman Young? I don't know where he's going to get his power.
He might say Pedroia, but we know Pedroia is going to top out at 20 homers, and that's your third-round pick.
That's tough to swallow. I mean, Zimmermann will be nice. Last week I said I don't know anything about Ryan Zimmermann. But still, that's two guys.
Yeah, he's definitely a little deficient on the power side.
But according to you guys, Matt Kemp can hit 400 homers, so that should that should at least put him in the top half of the league.
Dude, well, no matter how good Matt Kemp is, Matt Kemp's going to win the NL MVP, by the way, but that's not going to be enough to carry this whole team.
He's going to win the NL MVP?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
In what year?
Well, let's see, he should have won it in 2011, so he's going to win it in 2012.
What other teams do you guys not like? Any others?
I got to say Bleacher. I thought his pick of Gio Gonzalez was a little bit too early. I definitely think the Murphy pick was way too early. We've already mentioned he took Joe Mauer with pick 71. Even if you think Mauer is going to come back and be a 330 type of hitter, because that's what you're drafting him for, right? He's not going to hit 28 homers like he did the year before his contract. He's probably a 15, 16 home run guy. Even if you think he's going to hit 330, he still would have been there a lot later in the draft because nobody was taking catchers at that point. And I'll just say this about Prince Fielder. Overrated.
Well, did you see the graph in the new ESPN, the magazine?
Yeah, I saw it. Say what that was.
It showed Albert Pujols and Prince Fielder, and it had an outline of the stadium they were in last year, the stadium they're going to be in this year, and all the balls that went to the wall or were home runs, and showed which balls would have been gone in each park. If you take Pujols moving from St. Louis to Anaheim, he would have gained 3 home runs just based on the configurations of the new park. If you look at Prince, he had a net loss of, I think it was 19 home runs.
When Scott told me that, he said 19. I thought he must have been mistaken. I thought maybe it was 9.
Yeah.
19 home runs would not have gone out if he had been in Comerica. That means he's playing in a graveyard. To be a left-hander, I mean, I hope he is enough of a threat to the pitchers that Cabrera gets good pitches, because I have Miggy. But, oh, man. I think Prince could end up being the biggest disappointment of the first 10 to 15 picks in our draft.
Well, and it's funny. I was a guy who was of the opinion, well, Prince is going to hit bombs, and he's still going to hit bombs. But when you see that big a disparity, that has to make you nervous. That's a lot of bombs that are turned into doubles.
Do you really think he's only going to hit 22 home runs?
Well, let's say it's not 19. Let's say it's half of that. Let's say you subtract 9. Is he still worth going in the top 10?
No.
And to be honest with you, when we sat down for the draft, my biggest concern was that Prince Fielder wasn't going to be taken before my second pick, because he's the last really good first baseman on the board, and I would have felt almost obligated to take him at that point. It was a relief to me when Andrew took him, because I didn't want to, but I would have felt like I had to. And so I'm almost glad. I feel like he did me a favor by taking him.
So I put Andrew down. We'll see what happens. He's got his magical computerized draft selection program, and we'll see if that outsmarts the rest of us. But I put him down on the losers. Well, let's move on and talk about bold predictions. We are really only a couple days away. Less than a week from daily baseball team management. I'll start us off. A lot of action going on with closers. A lot of guys getting hurt. Potential guys moving up to take closers' jobs. I'm going to make a bold prediction. I'm going to say Carlos Marmol will not be the closer for the Cubs by May 15th. That guy's a gas can. Terrible second half last year. Bad spring so far. I think Marmol is overrated. Sorry, Wally. I think you lost a closer.
My thought with that is, who the heck are they going to bring in besides Marmol? Do they have anybody else, really? But maybe, I guess if he's a gas can, you got to put someone else out there. So,
anyway. Yeah, he was pretty bad last year. The thing with Marmol is, when he's right, he is so nasty. And yep. The strikeouts are ridiculous. I mean, he was top 3 closer last year going into the draft?
I took him last year. I took him early. He pitched 74 innings, and he had 99 Ks, so you got to like that ratio. But if your closer has a 4.01 ERA, and even worse, a 1.38 whip, that's a negative effect on your pitching numbers. The Ks aren't worth it, and I think he's gotten worse. So, bold prediction, but I think he's going to be riding the pine.
Mark Teixeira will hit over 280 this year. Boom.
Whoa.
That's a bold prediction.
Should we just rename this segment prediction? I mean, this is a guy that's hit in the 330s before. If you're so in love with him, which you are, you can't make a more bold prediction than that.
Bold the last 2 years, he's hit like 250. What are you talking about?
Which is why I wouldn't take him, but...
that's what I'm saying, it's bold.
All right,
we'll take the 280. 280.
Do you guys think he's going to hit 280? Like, do you think he has
a
shot?
I think he hits 270.
I'll tell you what, I'll come up with another bold one.
No, I don't think it's bold enough. I think he does hit 280, and I think he hits over 30 bombs.
Wow. All right, go. I'm going to see if I can find another.
All right, well, here's my bold prediction. Jimmy Rollins is still in 40 bases this year.
Wow.
The Jimmy Rollins.
Is there a secret?
Secret.
The secret's back. It took it a little while for the secret to actually get out, but he's still in 40 bases this year.
Why do you think he's still in 40 bases?
I just think he's right now. I think it's been a while since he's actually been right. And I think he's got a little bit to prove. So he doesn't have a whole lot left. He's going to empty that tank out this year, but he's still in 40 bases.
If he does, Hunter Pence might have a shot to drive in 50 runs. So.
I'll tell you what. Hunter Pence is going to drive in 100 runs this year.
Oh, that's a bold prediction.
That's not even a bold prediction.
That's not even.
He's hitting in the middle of that. I wouldn't have said that in this part of the segment because it's not bold. He's going to drive in 100 runs.
Yeah, that's not as bold as. That's more mild compared to my Teixeira prediction.
I agree. I think he has a better chance of driving 100 runs than Teixeira does to hit 280.
Wow. Wow.
He's hitting in the middle of the order, Joe.
Wow. 2009, 72 RBIs.
With the Houston Astros.
2010, 91.
With the Houston Astros.
Last year combined, 97. Pretty close. I'll take that bet. I'm saying under.
Okay, you want lunch? Wing Shack.
One Wing Shack.
All right.
Write it down.
There you go. Yeah, man. I think that's it.
All right. That's it for episode 5. Send us your emails at offbasepodcast.gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter if we're ever back on Twitter.
If we can get unbanned, you can find us there.
Yeah, we'll send out tweets once we're up and running. I don't know when that's going to be. If we need to go up here before the Supreme Court to get that cleared up or what. But.
Go on iTunes, like us, rate us.
Yeah, give us comments. You can talk about how sexy we sound. Yeah.
And tune in next Friday. We'll have another episode for you, and we'll be playing baseball.